I saw that nod, Jermaine.
Well, I'm just trying to really, what's the name of the show?
Bitch Talk.
Okay, all right. Bitch Talk.
Say whatever you want, however you want, all right?
Y'all get ready to try to bitch somebody on here.
Welcome to Bitch Talk. I'm your host, Aaron, here with my co-host, Ange, aka Captain Party. And over the last 10 years, we've been elevating marginalized voices through interviews and events.
Sometimes over a glass of whiskey. If you're thirsty for more bitches, head over to bitchtalkpodcast.com and follow us on Instagram.
A big thank you to 48 Hills and our listeners for voting us Best of the Bay Best Podcast in 2022 and 2023.
And now, on with the show.
All right, Bitch Talk, we are at South by Southwest 2024, and right now we're talking about the documentary Freaknik, The Wildest Party Never Told. We're sitting down with an executive producer, Geraldine Porras, and executive producer slash director, P. Frank Williams. Welcome to Bitch Talk.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Can you guys tell our audience what Freaknik is all about?
Yeah, Freaknik, the wildest story ever never told, is about a small HBCU picnic that started off by some kids who couldn't afford to go home for spring break, and really turned into it grew by word of mouth every year up until nearly 500,000 people attended Freaknik and came to Atlanta, and really was a cultural hub for Black culture, music, and just the Black joy in essence. And P. Frank can speak to that a little bit more too.
Well, I mean, I think Freaknik is essentially the Black Woodstock, I guess, if you want to find like an easy way for people to understand, a big cultural party that took place in the streets of Atlanta in the 80s and 90s. It was like a young African-American college students from the AUC, which is the Atlanta University Center, had their own sort of Daytona Beach. And it, you know, kind of spawned like a cultural phenomenon where it went from like a few hundred people to a few hundred thousand people. Mm-hmm. So, and it ended up stopping in the late 90s because it got a little bit out of control. So,
can you talk about how both of you became part of this project and sort of this massive excitement, but also weight that you feel, because it's such an important moment in history that those of us that didn't participate in it knew nothing about?
Well, you know, I actually attended back in the day, and this is something I've been trying to get in motion for a while, and Swirl Films, you know, kind of gestated it with Jay and Nikki. And so then I came on to help develop it and put it together and, you know, go out and pitch it. It's a typical process and put it together. Got Geraldine in the mix as the showrunner to, you know, run the show. And so, you know, I tell these kind of stories in a lot of other shows like Unsung, American Gangster, Who Killed Tupac. But this to me was a good positive story that a lot of myth and lore about it. I mean, you guys looks like a couple of millennials over there. And so, no millennials, no Gen Z, no? Okay. But this was a time when the Gen X people were having their little debauchery moment as young college people and having a good time. And so, you know, we ended up being able to sell it to Hulu, and Hulu with all of their hard work and Disney helped us put this together. So we're excited. March 21st.
Yeah. And to add to that, I think I came on the project. I pride myself in being able to come into projects and really help find the heart and the nuance in these stories. And there is a lot of nuance in Freaknik. So that's really what attracted me to this project.
Let's talk about archival footage, because there's a lot of it, thank goodness, right? But How do you sort through it all and figure out what's going to go in there, what's not? And then, you know, what's sad about leaving some of that on the floor, the cutting room floor?
No, I think part of it is one, sourcing the archival. A lot of this archival was sitting in people's garages and boxes that they hadn't opened in decades. And so when you start to hear about the buzz of the film happening, then you have folks that are really reaching out to you, letting you know that they have photos and videos that they want to submit. So part of that process was the logistics of getting it from these tapes, these beta tapes and VHSs digitized, and then screening hundreds of hours of footage to really see what was valuable, and finding a good medium to really capture the essence of Freaknik, but also not trying to expose people or ruin anyone's lives for anything that they might have done when they were teenagers. So combing through that with a fine tooth to make sure that we're really capturing that essence, but also being mindful of people and sort of their privacy.
Yeah, I think we just wanted to make sure there's already a bunch of stuff like on YouTube and all over the internet. We were trying to put stuff that people hadn't seen. Fortunately, we put the bat, there's a bat signal with Jermaine Dupri and Luke and myself, just trying to get people that I know to do it. So we were very fortunate that some of your aunties and uncles, I don't know if you guys was there, but they had some DB tapes and some little Hi8 tapes. Remember the big camcorder tapes? So
Yes.
yeah, that was back in the day. So we unearthed those, and there you have Freaknik.
Yeah, I wanted to get into the incredible cast that you have of participants, each one bigger than the next. Was it easy to get them into into this story because of their love for it? I mean, it really shines through how much this moment meant to them.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think a lot of people who lived through Freaknik, like Luke, like Jermaine Dupri, like Little John, like the mayor, the former mayor of Atlanta. I think it's a strange story because it's not just about the party. I think people, I lured you in with with the candy of the party and the turn up and all of that. But I'm sure if you watch the film, there's a lot of vegetables in there, which is like politics and race, police brutality. There's a lot of different things that the film talks about that people don't realize that it's about. And so I think a lot of the people who participated wanted to shed light on that. So we just didn't talk to the rappers and the singers. There's politicians in there, people who were on the Visitors Bureau, people who stopped it, from the city's perspective. So I think it's a pretty well-rounded film. It's about a lot of different things, not just Freaknik.
Yeah, and I think because of that nuance, it's important to have, like P. Friend said, have that mix of not only the recognizable faces that are going to draw you in, but also the real people that were living Freaknik and also affected by Freaknik in good and in negative ways.
Yes.
No, and also that you got the original organizers in there.
Well, no, I mean, I think there's a tremendous origin story. I think for us, we wanted to make sure people got a real history lesson of it because I think a lot of people think it was just a party that just happened in the 90s and, Too Short and everybody and Tupac was hanging out there. But this is a real story of young African American students from the Atlanta University Center who didn't have a place for themselves. So they created this Black Joy, essentially a Black Joy picnic for themselves. And so it's, we wanted to make sure that the originators were there, which is the DC Metro Club. Shout out to them. They were, I guess you guys in your generation call it lit. They were the littest people back in the day. So, the DC Metro Club and a lot of these colleges, they have clubs for each city or each state. And so the DC Metro Club was the origin and the genesis of Freaknik. And so it was them who started it.
And it was really nice to be able to include them too. I think a lot of them hadn't even thought about Freaknik or really the big impact that Freaknik has had, and they're not often recognized. So it was nice to be able to include them as a part of this history because without them, Freaknik wouldn't exist.
I did want to talk about how you managed to balance the party, the drama, and the legacy because it is important to show all sides, but you want to make sure that you're giving Freaknik the love that it deserves at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, Geraldine and myself, I feel like I only had one shot at this, and so that means I had to get it right. I don't think there's going to be a Freaknik. Maybe there'll be another series or something like that that's scripted or something, but I knew that we had to get it right. And there's a lot of pieces of the puzzle that I think a lot of people didn't realize. So hopefully when you watch, you was like, oh, Everybody that's watched, I think, has got a sense of it's more than just a picnic. And so it was important for us to really tell a full story about race and class and a lot of different things that you saw in the film that weren't just about, people partying in the streets.
Yeah, and I think a lot of this is reflective of our society, right? Like good and bad exist in the same space and at the same time. So it was important for us to really be able to show that full scope of what Freaknik was and everything that it entailed.
And we can't shy away from talking about the music that's helping to tell the story of Freaknik. I was reminded of a lot of the music that I had bumping in my little Honda Civic at the time. And I was like, oh man, what's that? So can you talk about using that music to help tell the story?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, Freaknik is a music documentary. I mean, you couldn't have Freaknik without the music, and the music drives so much of not just Black culture, but society in general. And so you could chart, I'm sure you'll talk to Jermaine or Luke, you could chart the rise of Atlanta music scene, So Def, L.A. Reid, Dallas Austin, all of those things through the rise of Freaknik. And so there's sort of a parallel story, the rise of the music in Atlanta and how Atlanta became the capital of Black America, not just musically, but culturally as well. So the music goes hand in hand.
And it also set the tone for Freaknik, right? You had Luke coming into the mix with bass music and JD, and so it really set the energy and the tone for Freaknik. And so it was a great great synergy with the festival and really the music, like P. Frank mentioned.
Yeah, I'm curious to know what you think of current day hip hop and what you want current day artists to take from this film now that, you know, they have to carry on for the for future generations.
I mean, I think that there was a lightness and funness in the music that is not as common these days. I think that there was just a lived experience at the time, and folks were really just embracing having fun and including that into the music. And so it'd be nice to be able to have music that you can dance to again.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to be the old guy in the club, but I feel like all of the time now, everybody's so ready to take a picture or like take a video. They don't enjoy being in the moment and being musical and that kind of stuff. And so Freaknik was imagine you not trying to take a selfie everywhere you go or a video. You're actually dancing, having fun, talking to people. You know, one of the big things about the film, which I think a lot of people didn't realize, but imagine a party all over. I'm from the Bay Area. Oakland, she's from the
Same
Bay Area
vein.
as well. Yeah, we're from the
Yes.
Bay Area. And so imagine you just like on 880, or you're in downtown Oakland, then you're in San Francisco, you're in Richmond, and people are partying everywhere. Can you imagine that today? Not just for the safety, but just in terms of the fun. And there was nobody like, you know, shooting or fighting. There was a, you know, small incidents, but literally people were enjoying it in a safe environment. So I just wish that some of that part of it could come back in terms of what's happening today. And I think that, like Geraldine said, the fun and the music is a little different today. And every generation is great. I'm not gonna be like, you know, it's horrible music, but you know, I think we got y'all beat though with the music in the 90s, so I don't care what y'all say.
We were dancing to it though.
And
We had no
by
business dancing to some of that music, but we were
That's
dancing
true.
to
Yeah.
it.
Yep.
Well, Uncle Luke taught me how to dance, so I don't know why that's a
I'll tell him that when I see him in a little while. I'll tell him that you taught him how to dance.
Well, thank you so much. We really enjoyed watching this film, and we're super excited for everybody to get a chance to see it on Hulu. And congratulations.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
you.
All right, we are sitting down with the executive producers and participants of Freaknik, The Wildest Party Never Told. We got Jermaine Dupri and Uncle Luke here. Thank you so much for being on Bitch Talk.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So obviously this film is so much fun to watch. I'm curious to hear both of your experiences at your first ever Freaknik. Who did you meet? What did you do? How did you end up there? And hopefully you can remember something.
I'm gonna let Luke tell y'all because I'm sure his experience was a lot more exciting than mine.
Yeah, we have two different levels of experience. I mean, mine was again, my experience, like I say, you know, going to Atlanta, you know, when I heard about this party, you know, anything had freak in it, you know, I thought I was supposed to be there and be a part of anything with freak going on at that period of time when I was in the Two Live Crew. And so, you know, going there, you know, bringing the freak into Freaknik, not knowing that I was a part of turning something out again. But that was my experience.
Yeah, my experience was more or less what y'all see as far as the traffic and I'm probably one of the kids that I couldn't get in the club. So only thing that I could do was participate in riding around in the cars and just sitting in the cars and being in the street and watching all the activity that was happening in the streets and in the club parking lot. So that was my first experience. I mean, as I got older, I was able to, you know, go into the clubs and see what was happening. But my first experience was just I was in the cars. I was one of the people that was in the traffic.
We saw the
Holding up the
traffic.
traffic.
Yeah,
Holding up the
holding up
traffic.
the traffic.
Holding up the traffic. He had the girls on the hoods of the cars.
Oh, it's a party. Look, I wanted to know, Jermaine, would there be the Jermaine Dupri that we know now if there wasn't a Freaknik?
Yeah, probably still. I mean, I don't know, you know, what my background of trying to make sure everybody understands Atlanta. And it probably wouldn't be a welcome to Atlanta if it wasn't a Freaknik, because I speak so highly about this time period in that song and how people came to the city and they didn't leave, right? So it was a lot of things that Atlanta probably wouldn't be Atlanta if it wasn't Freaknik. I don't know about me, but I know Atlanta wouldn't be Atlanta if it wasn't like at least what Atlanta is today and what y'all get the chance to see. It wouldn't be anything like that if it wasn't for Freaknik. Mm-hmm.
So the beauty of this film, especially for people like us who grew up in the 80s and the 90s, was the archival footage. So I'm curious to know from the both of you, what is something from that era that you want to bring back into style, and what's something that should stay there?
The music has always been there. I mean, you know, what you hear and see in music nowadays, you know, back then it was us, the guys, rapping about certain topics. Now you see the girls rapping about certain topics, and just that whole party element of it all. I mean, you know, we went to Magic City party last night, and that is always going to be there. You know, that's all a part of it.
Yeah, I think the music, you know, just having that music, because it just added to the dynamic of hip hop. I think, you know, you need that. You need, you know, I think something that Killer Mike said in the Magic City documentary, he said that sinners and saints, they need each other, right? And this is, to me, you have to have this music that seems like it's the soundtrack for this participation that we're talking about. we'll try to keep it PG. yeah, you have to have this music, and it feels like, you know, you got to have both. You got to have the saints and the sinners, and they all, we need each other, and that music lets you know that you need one another.
Why is it so important for y'all to be involved with this project and for letting everyone know about this cultural history?
It's Captain D, what you talking about?
No, let me tell you, you know, Nikki and Jay, you know, they came to me one day and it was like, yo, let's do Freaknik. And I was like, really, you want to do that? And then I was like, we can't do it without having Jermaine a part of it, because he's the GOAT when it comes to music in Atlanta. I mean, I remember this guy, you know, me and him when he was running around Jack the Rapper, which was another historic movement for Atlanta then, you know, and the things that he's done, you know, for Atlanta as far as the music industry, whether it's, you know, bringing up all these different top of the line artists, you know, from Lil Jon on up, you know. So it was really, really important to have the two elements. You know, I play one, I'm not from Atlanta, but the part I play in this whole thing is bringing the freak in the Freaknik, and that's just my little part of it. I guess I'm the corrupter of it all, the bad.
I had like the same type of meeting. We had a meeting at Starbucks and about Freaknik, and I was just saying, you know, I wasn't gonna do this without Luke. You know what I mean? I feel like just him being the soundtrack. Like, you know what I mean? Like, even when we talking right now, all I hear is, you know what I mean, I just hear his music. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, it's a lot of questions for me as a younger person. Like, I didn't know why Luke was saying Bankhead and Scarred. I didn't know why, you know, there's a lot of things that I learned from being in this and doing this with him. So I needed this hip hop education for myself. So I think it's only right to have the most authentic people involved with these documentaries.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that I love about this documentary is that hip hop artists from all over the country united together. I think this next generation can learn a lot from that unity. So what are you hoping this next generation of hip hop takes from this story?
I guess I think the unity, you know, it's like even though me and Luke weren't hanging out at Freaknik, we damn near should have been hanging out. Just felt like everybody was together. You know what I mean? It was like whatever energy that was happening at that time, everybody was bringing that same energy. It wasn't like people was coming to the city and they was trying to act crazy, and then you from the city had to protect your ground. That's how I feel now. I feel like people try to go to different people's cities and try to act like they taking over. Yeah. Where it was like, this was, you come to the city, everybody coming to the city with this love, and we all want to be outside. Captain Luke here, we want to go see where the freak at, what's happening, what's going on. We go to these places, and these people are dancing. That's why when you look at it, it's almost like impossible to believe, because if you wasn't there, you can't, you haven't seen this nowhere else in modern day history of hip hop. It's just people don't understand like the love. It's a love that was there, and a genuine love for everybody that was coming to Atlanta to just put this out in the street and show like, hey, we from Miami, hey, we from VA, da 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 da, and just like celebrate where you from and just all celebrate it in one space.
Yeah, it's Atlanta, and it could have only happened in Atlanta, because you know we always look at Atlanta as the mecca of African Americans, you know, in the South, because it just has so much history beyond just the music. And for something like this to, it was like the perfect storm, really, to be honest with you, you know, and to see where, how far Atlanta has came from Freaknik to where they're at right now. And like you hear guys in the documentary say that, you know, they came to Atlanta for Freaknik and they never left. Yeah. You know, and you see how big the music industry, the music scene is, you know, guys going there, and you know, the most iconic thing I always remember, you know, and which I love the most, was every time you got off the plane, and if you did go to Atlanta to do a show or anything, you saw that So-So Def big old sign on the highway, let you know, this is what it's all about, and you know, and that's the beautiful part about it, and you seeing, you know, what Atlanta is doing right now for the rest of the world, whether it's film, music, entertainment, art, yes. You know, it is now Black Hollywood, and all that came from, in my opinion, all that came from Freaknik and the things that JD did for his city.
No, well, thank you so much for your time. Y'all were a part of our growing up, so it was so good to hear that music again. Again, we've been speaking with executive producers and participants Jermaine Dupri, Uncle Luke, Freaknik, The Wildest Party Never Told. It's going to be on Hulu. Thanks, you guys.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us on today's show. You can find more information about this episode in our show notes.
If you're missing us, you can visit us at bitchtalkpodcast.com to sign up for our newsletter and buy us a cup of coffee.
Did you know we're also on the radio? You can find us at bff.fm.
And lastly, rate and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. All the cool bitches are doing it.
This podcast is a proud member of the bff.fm podcast network. Learn more at podcasts.bff.fm.
BFF.fm, best frequencies forever.